Ghost Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf Radio calling. This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling. Yeah, I had an interesting day on the 20th of January. Watched the whole inaugural thing. I watched the celebrations at the during the evening hours. And I gotta tell you, the blacks being celebratory and them being, you know, moved and overwhelmed by the situation and feeling so happy, that does not bother me at all. I gotta be honest with you guys, I don't hate Barack Obama, but I certainly don't like the guy, because Barack Obama is a Frankenstein monster created by the stupidity of the white race. First of all, it started with a treasonous white woman who should have been shot the minute she came home with a nigger from Kenya. So, but I gotta tell you, I mean, you know, listening to these TV talking heads, Charles Gibson and Tom Brokaw and Diane Sawyer, a pox upon their motherfucking house. I mean, all I heard all day long during the commentary was just massive white kissing black ass. You know, Tom Brokaw talking in a manner like, oh, he was so moved that finally, you know, people that were so humiliated and held down have finally reached a day of triumph. Fuck you, Tom Brokaw. You know, and Diane Sawyer, I mean, they had to actually, her co-host, I forgot who it was, had to actually tap her on the arm, tell her to shut the fuck up because certain proceedings were about to start. I mean, just whites just overdoing it with black ass kissing. And if any of you witnessed this spectacle, I mean, how could you not stand in front of your TV, give your Remington 870 combat shotgun a rack on the slide, chambering around, and just say to yourself with all seriousness, game over. Game over. I mean, you know, at the end of the 20th of January, I have to say I was not a racist anymore. I felt like racist was too weak of a word to describe my mindset. I have become a full-blown misanthropist. I mean, I hate my race so much now. I mean, I don't hate you guys, you ghost wolves out there, you men and women who are going through the metamorphosis night right now, changing from men to wolves. Brings to mind this movie that's coming out today, Rise of the Lycans. Lycan comes from the word lycanthropy. Changing, a metamorphosis of man changing into a wolf, werewolves. I like that. And I hope that's taking place. But I gotta tell you, I did not feel very good about my race by the end of the day. And, you know, they had this 6-year-old kid on TV with this zombie-like look on his face. 6 years old! Saying to the camera, you know, oh, as long as I've been alive, there's only been white presidents, but now there's a black president. You know, he said it with like this, at the end of his statement, he said it with like this happy tone, but it looked very forced to me. And, I mean, I wanted to put my foot through the TV, but you know what? You know, I could turn the TV off and maybe turn on some educational, but how many millions of our people are being just bamboozled with this bullshit? You know, I mean, it brings to mind, you know, how are we going to treat whites who are not with us? I think we need to take a harder line stance against whites who are not with us. I think we need to treat them more ruthlessly than anybody. More ruthless than we would treat the Jews. Definitely as ruthless as we would treat those that have betrayed us. But we haven't even crossed that bridge yet, have we? Maybe I'm asking too much. Maybe me doing these shows is a colossal waste of my motherfucking time. And I was thinking about that yesterday. I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's guys out there that are listening. Listen to all the shows. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the end-all, be-all of resist.com. I try to be a brass tacks kind of guy, try to give you guys some insights into methods that have helped me, you know. But in order for me to become effective like I was before, I would have to, and I envision this, And I was saying this to myself this morning, that there's going to come a day. It may happen 5 days from now. It may happen 5 years from now. I don't know when. I don't have a specific date in mind. But my family, maybe even Tom Metzger is going to call this number up and say, damn, I haven't heard from Frank Bauer in a while. Where's he been? And my family will be ringing this number off the hook. So where's Frank? Frank not being my real name. Where's Frank at? And I'm just going to disappear. And I'm going to show up in another part of the world. I'm not going to limit myself to the United States. You know, that's just how it's going to be. So I hope the metamorphosis is taking place. I hope you guys are changing. I hope you are starving the sheep in you. We all have sheep in us. Starving the sheep in you and feeding the wolf. How do you do that? You control what your eyes read and what your ears hear. When something on TV comes on, you know, like the Ernie Davis, the Express story, you know, the football player, black football player in the 60s who was, you know, had all this racism and he overcame all these odds and he had this illness and Dennis Quaid portrays his coach and, you know, Hollywood's working overtime to create all these movies that tug at our heartstrings. And we are more susceptible to that than any other race. Our downfall as a race is our proclivity towards mercy and compassion. And like I told you before, that we are disappearing. We are disappearing as a race because of our refusal to get our hands dirty. But most of all, a refusal to shed blood. You know, I got a email the other day. Well, actually, email was forwarded to me. I'm going to call this guy, I'm just going to call him Odin. And he lives in Sweden. And he, you know, talked about some of the things that are happening in Scandinavia. And he's very encouraging email. But I want to say to my friend in Sweden, brother, call you Odin, you don't have the law enforcement capabilities that my country has. You have more of a chance to really wreak havoc in your country than any of us have in ours. We need to be extra careful in the United States of sold-out America, the United Snakes of commercialized America. But you guys, I mean, your law enforcement does not have the training that our law enforcement has. So you guys have carte blanche in what you can do. You know, you guys that live outside of the Stockholm area can do some real good for our race in Stockholm, in some of the other cities in Sweden. You know, first of all, you need to initiate black propaganda, you know. And, you do that by scrawling on bathroom walls, and you say that we are a new and upcoming revolutionary movement, and we are, you know, going to take things over. You can pretend to be Arabs. You can pretend to be African immigrants, Moroccans. I don't know how well you guys know their vernacular or how they would use the Swedish language or how they would word things. Maybe you would just be better off saying you are part of the Swedish Aryan Partisan Army, the SAPA, you know, and just start saying right now, we are everywhere, we are going to start fucking shit up, and go on a massive campaign of propaganda everywhere. Or maybe, now I'm just leaving it up to you guys, maybe you should just start being active in a very influential way, without any propaganda. Start looking at certain things in your society, Odin, my friend in Sweden. Do you have video stores? We have video stores out the yin-yang in the United Snakes of America. And video stores, and you know, I know Tom Metzger said on the show that he loves to go to movies, and, you know, I refuse to waste my money on movies if, for one, I am not entertained in a white Aryan kind of way, or I am not educated in some certain aspect. Do you have video stores in your society? I guarantee you have a lot of movies, put out by Hollywood that promote race mixing. Like a movie like Save the Last Dance. I don't know what's up with this Julia Stiles. She's been in 2 race mixing movies where she's bedding down with the mud. So look for video stores. What do you do about that? Use your imagination. What I would like to see, I'd like to turn on CNN one day. Remember, I'm not trying to be a bad guy. I'm not trying to be a criminal. I don't want to be a criminal. I don't see myself as a criminal. But I'm just saying I would love to turn on CNN one day, drinking my Monster energy drink, low carb, and hear about video stores all over Sweden being firebombed, being bombed. Maybe a guy wearing nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing of himself walk into a Swedish video store and say, hey, you have a movie Save the Last Dance? Oh, yeah, we got it over there in the new release section or whatever. And you just pull out a fucking knife and just start hacking up the guy. You calmly walk out of the store. You've reconned. You've scouted out your escape route. You're not going to walk out, run outside the door of the establishment and say, which way did he go? You know, looking left and right. You're not going to do that. You're not going to be confused and overwhelmed with fear because, you know, for one, you set a goal. Two, you visualized success at your goal. Three, you self-talked yourself before the day of the mission, days, weeks in advance, saying, I can do this. I am an Aryan Swedish warrior. And four, you arousal control. You use deep breathing techniques to keep yourself calm. And you have your escape route planned out. And then later on, you contact a newspaper or a police station, preferably a newspaper, not using any phone or email or BlackBerry that's affiliated with you. You say, I am a member of the Swedish Aryan Partisan Army. We are everywhere, and we will not allow Sweden to become mongrelized. And if this activity is copied all over Europe, so be it. Okay, we need to become a lawless, remember, the word lawless is relative, you know, and the system will call us lawless while we ourselves call ourselves revolutionary. You know, let it be studied, let it be puzzled over and talked about and eventually copied all over the ancestral homelands of the white race, a place that we affectionately know as Europe. So you got video stores. You see a white Swedish girl walking arm in arm with a fucking African immigrant. I don't know how accessible guns are in Sweden. I assume they're not. You go up to the black guy, you approach him from the rear. You go up to the black guy and you hit him with a hammer in the back of his neck. Now, I'm just saying, I would like to wake up one day, turn on CNN and hear about some guy wearing uncharacteristic, nondescript clothing, coming up to a mixed-race couple on the streets of Stockholm, approach them from the 6 o'clock position, the rear, and hitting the black guy in the back of the neck, up by where the neck meets the base of the head, called the brain stem, just one blow, boom, with a hammer, with instant kill. That is a kill shot in the martial arts. If it's a kill shot with a hand weapon, such as karate chop or a hammer fist, can you imagine how much of a kill shot it would be with a blunt object? Don't hit him on the head. Hit him where the neck meets the base of the back of the head, the brain stem. Instant kill. You don't got to try to negotiate with this guy, and you're not going to negotiate with that white Swedish woman. You're going to disfigure her in some way. And when this story breaks loose all over Sweden, you know, there's going to be some fear in the white Swedish women of maybe possibly bedding down, because Sweden is very liberal. So, brother, you have your hands cut. You have your work cut out for you. So does France, so does England, and so does the United States. Okay, so that's how I'd like to see ghost wolves in Sweden handle things. Just a couple things I had in mind. I was watching this show the other day called Burn Notice. And I really want all you guys to watch this show out there. I really want Gorilla Computer Man to watch this show, because this show gives a lot of, like an episode yesterday, he used a cell phone, he wired a cell phone into an amplifier and went through a computer to find out someone's location. Gorilla Computer Man, I really want you to watch this show and tell me if this is misinformation this show is putting out, or is this stuff really, I mean, can they really do this? But I want everyone out there to watch this show and pay particular attention to the narrated portions of the show by the guy. I mean, it gives some great combat philosophy, some great lone wolf philosophy. So that's one of your homework assignments out there. You guys need to watch this show. But one of the ways one of his marks was killed, he displaced the oxygen in a room with nitrogen. How he pumped in nitrogen in there, they didn't really go into. But is that true? Can that eliminate a problem that breathes oxygen? You know, a problem that we have, someone who's a problem to us, and it not show up on the tox screen? That's what it said in the show. I wonder about that. Let's talk about something here. Odin, directing this to you, my friend, my brother in Sweden, and everywhere else in the white diaspora. When you're approaching somebody you're going to deal with, practice this. I mean, the American mafia has this down pat. When they approach somebody that they're going to eliminate or deal with in the mafioso kind of way, they approach their mark with smiles and friendliness. And the reason why these guys are so easily whacked, because they never see it coming. And I want you guys to practice that. You, my friend, my brother in Sweden, approach your mark with a smile on your face. Approach your mark with a very disarming body language and facial countenance, facial expression. And remember, one of the best rules of hand-to-hand combat is to close the distance with your enemy without putting him on his guard. You do that by softening up your facial expression, your facial countenance, maybe with a smile, maybe with a nod. Don't make too much eye contact. If he makes eye contact with you, you know, and it's direct eye contact direct to you, maybe give him a little nod and look away. Look passive. It takes a strong man to feign weakness to hide the true wolf he is underneath his skin. So no hard looks when you're approaching a mark. A mark is someone you need to deal with. And you don't want to close the distance to your enemy with a hard look on your face. Okay. My friend in Sweden, I want you to know that there was a situation we had in New Jersey a couple of years ago where a couple of white guys wanted to deal with the illegal immigration problem on their own. They got a work van. They dressed in work attire. I believe they dressed as painters, you know, with the white pants and white shirts. And they had, you know, I mean, they weren't completely new. I mean, they had paint spots on them to make them look like these guys were authentic painters. And they rolled through a Home Depot early in the early morning hours. I know you probably don't have Home Depot over there, but, you know, adjust this to your specific situation. So these guys in New Jersey, and I forgot what town it was, rolled through a Home Depot early in the morning because a lot of Mexicans, we have illegal alien Mexicans who like to hang out at a Home Depot looking for work because contractors, you know, hire them out for the day's cheap labor and pay them cash. These fucking sticks love it. So these guys, I think it was two or three, they found a Mexican illegal alien in the parking lot of Home Depot and said, "Hey, we need a worker. You want to work today?" "Oh, sí, señor. Yeah, yo necesito trabajo. Yeah, I need work." And they loaded them up in advance. "We're going to do some painting today." And they took them to some disclosed location, and they beat the shit out of them. You know, kind of worked them over pretty good and said, "Hey, tell the rest of your Mexican friends get out of our country." Now, I like their technique. You know, you can use this in Sweden. I would like to hear about it on CNN. The latest things that are going down in a country that's part of our ancestral homeland, Sweden. There's never been spics or niggers or Asian niggers ever walked the plains of Sweden thousands of years ago. It's been always predominantly part of our white homeland, so I really care what happens in Sweden. So you can copy their technique, but you don't want to beat the shit out of the immigrant. What you want to do, and I'd like to hear about this on CNN, I'm not telling you guys to do it, I'm just saying what I'd like to see, what my sick imagination would like to see. And I am not by nature sick. You know, if the system hated me so much, why did they create me? So you're not going to beat the shit out of your illegal alien. No, you're going to kill him. You're going to fucking chop his head off. You're going to place it on a spike with a sign or something. And you're going to handle the sign and your writing utensil with gloves the whole time. And you're going to write in an uncharacteristic manner. So, handwriting analysis. Or maybe you don't even need the sign. Maybe the head alone will make all the difference. If you don't want to place it on a spike, you can make a hole under the tongue and put a piece of wire around the bottom jaw of the head and hang it up around a fence somewhere, fence post or a light post or something. You don't want to hang it somewhere where it's not going to be discovered for days, because decomposition will make the jaw come apart with the head and all that other stuff. So put it in a public place in the wee hours of the morning. So that's how you deal with that. So you can start off with black propaganda, like in the book Wasp. And if you guys have never read Wasp, it'd be a good read. I talked about some of it in some of my prior shows that I'm trying to locate. And book gives a lot of tips. But if you take the mindset of Wasp, the mindset of the 100th monkey, and the mindset of the devil's advocate, you remember the devil's advocate, Tom talked about that book on a show years ago, where basically these people who wanted a revolution, and what they did is they pretend to be liberals and social Marxists, and they were like over the top with it, that they just pushed the system into so much liberalism and social Marxism that the people just freaked out and rebelled because they were just so sick of it. This Messiah thing with Obama, that may be there may be a golden lining or silver lining in that. You know, I've said before that maybe as much as we hate it, if there's a black candidate running for a city council or a mayor, maybe a good idea to put him in there. Let him do that. Because remember, we keep talking about the collapse on this show, and you've read about it in the update. Well, I was thinking the other day, you know what? We're students of history. We look in the past and we get, you know, motivation from the past and, you know, how things came to a head and other situations throughout history. But you know what? You know who else knows history? Our enemies. They know history. They're preparing not to make the same mistakes that the system of centuries ago made. So we may not have a collapse. We just may, you know, get really poor in this country, and then all of a sudden, overnight, we wake up in a tyranny. That can very easily happen. That is definitely within the realm of possibility. To think that, you know, collapse is coming. Maybe not. You know, I know the Dow Jones is going down, and they're preparing for things way in advance. I told you guys before that they got prisons out west that are fully staffed with no prisoners. They got the 3rd Infantry Division or 3rd Armored Division, one of those units deactivated in Germany, and they're going to transfer them over to the United States. So maybe something to think about here. You know, I'd like to think of English as the language of pan-Aryanism, you know, because a lot of the world speaks English. And if we can get our message across, I mean, I wish these Ghost Wolf radio shows could be translated into other European languages. If there's a way that can happen, you know, you, my brother in Sweden, maybe you can do that. Maybe you can download this show, and I want you guys to download all these Ghost Wolf shows. You know, put them on cassette tape, play them for potential comrades who have proven themselves with deeds, not words. You don't want to go by anyone's, what they say. But English as a pan-Aryan language, I think that's a nice probability we can maybe get our message out there. But if you're a ghost wolf, you have no message. You're all about activity. I'm talking about you guys that don't have it in you to be a ghost wolf. I sure hope that there's someone under the sound of my voice that has the mental constitution to be a ghost wolf. Remember, you know, morality is all relative. You know, I mean, 100 years ago, we didn't allow blacks and whites to intermingle. Now it's like, it's a holy act now. Ever since Obama became the president, I'm seeing all these baby celebrations on TV, and it seems like it's always a black guy with a white lady. You know, so. Alright, but I think some other languages we insurgents need to learn. If you're a ghost wolf living in America, you need to learn Spanish. And not Castilian Spanish. The Spanish they speak in Spain. You do not want that Spanish, okay? You want to learn Mexican Spanish, you know? You want to just be able to look at some fucking speck who's looking at you and say to him, tu miras a mi uno más tiempo, yo te voy a matar, hijo de la verga. You look at me hard one more time, I'm going to fucking kill you. Pretty much a translation of that. It may not be perfect Spanish, but believe me, they understand that. I've had old Mexican ladies sign themselves with the cross when I said to them one time, tú no consideras mi papá es Satán? You don't consider that my father is Satan? I've had old Mexican ladies just cross themselves and speak in real fast Spanish, and the only word I can understand was Diablo, so something I like to have fun with. You want to have fun with some Spanish, you guys that don't want to learn Spanish but want to be street agitators? Learn the word verga. B-E-R-G-A. Make sure you roll your verga. Pinche la verga. When you say it in front of a Mexican woman, she may laugh the first time, because Mexican men do not say that word in front of Mexican women. It is very, it's taboo in their culture. So when you're around a bunch of Mexican ladies, say, pinche la verga. Ah, fuck, la verga. La verga. Just keep saying it over and over again. They will just, they'll want to claw their eyes out there just to get you to shut up, okay? So learn their cultural nuances that can drive them insane. But I recommend you ghostos out there to learn Mexican Spanish. Learn that shit. I learned by pretending to be friends with Mexicans that I worked with. They thought I was a great guy. And you know what? When they think you're a great guy and you're white and they don't perceive you as a threat and they think that you love their culture and you love their food and their women and all that stuff, which I pretended, I'm not a racial sellout, trust me, but I've gleaned great amounts of information. I have been invited over to fiestas in Mexican homes when I was the only white guy. And I'm walking through their house and I'm noting their security and I noticed that this guy who invited me over to his house, he had a window in the back of his house that he couldn't secure. Makes me wonder. French is another good language to learn. You know, you can be active in Quebec. You can be active in France. There are other places in the world that speak French. Learn Polish. You know, Polish is kind of becoming a language that's spread out. Definitely learn Russian. You know, get that Rosetta Stone computer program. Learn Russian. A lot of Eastern Europeans know Russian. If they don't know English, they'll know Russian. Now, who knows? Because you're not advertising yourself as an outright racist, learning these languages can get you into some contacts. So it's time we stop being lazy, stop listening to the shows, and just by the fact that you listen to these shows, you think you're committing an act of revolutionary activism. You're not. It's not enough for you to listen to these shows. Okay? I've talked hard about NSM and Klan, Ku Klux Klan and other shows, and, you know, I don't want to disrespect you guys. You know, I really care about you guys. I love you guys. You guys are my brothers. But the time is now that you disband these organizations. You split up. You go your separate ways quietly. Leave town quietly. Change your appearance. Be looking into that now. You can be doing all your research now. You're living in the town you live in now. Start quietly shutting up about race. If you're flying a Confederate flag outside your house, take it down. Do you have a screwdriver t-shirt? It's time to cleanse. I don't like to use the word cleanse because that denotes that the things I'm talking about are dirty. Sterilize. Start sterilizing everything you have now. You know, when you hit the road, you're not going to have a screwdriver t-shirt. You know what? Take your screwdriver t-shirts and your white power t-shirts and your Nazi swastika t-shirts and put them in a plastic bag and give them to Goodwill. What a surprise that would be at these clothing centers where they're pulling out clothes to give to, you know, the homeless. You know, I mean, that would be freaking awesome for someone to open up a plastic bag of clothing and thinking, oh, this is such a great guy who gave this clothing, and turns out to be Adolf Hitler t-shirts. So, with all respect, guys, I plead with you guys to give up the old tactics. Give it up, okay? We are the new niggers. We are the new niggers of this country, and it's going to get a whole lot worse for us. We are the butt of all jokes. It's nothing for you to turn on Comedy Central or Def Jam Comedy and hear about whites being the butt of all jokes. Larry the Cable Guy, you know, I heard an interview with this guy the other day. He's not even Southern. You know, next time he's in a Southern city, one of you good old redneck white boys need to deal with him. He's making millions off of belittling you guys and making you look stupid and perverted. And come on, man, is he an accurate description of what the Southern white man is? Let me tell you something. I've seen the movie Al Pacino, Scent of a Woman. And the one part where he's checking in a hotel room with Chris O'Donnell's character, and he's sitting in a bellhop as a Puerto Rican guy, and he gives him a tip, and he walks out, and Al Pacino says, Puerto Ricans, they always made the best infantrymen. Bullshit. I was in the fucking infantry for 11 and a half years, and the best infantrymen by far, the best super soldiers I have ever come across were the white Southerners. Southern white boys, Southern rednecks, hillbillies were by far the best soldiers. They out-soldiered all the Northern white boys, and they definitely out-soldiered all the Puerto Ricans, niggers, and chinks, and goddamn Samoans. Out-soldiered all of them. Okay? It could be raining, it could be snowing, it could be freezing, and that Southern white boy would be the one who's not complaining. That's right. My respect before I became all out racially aware for the Southern white boys started when I was in the Army. I was so impressed with their demeanor, their attitude, their hospitality, their courtesy, and you know what? Their intelligence. And Larry the Cable Guy portrays you guys as dumbasses. You need to deal with that. How are you going to deal with that? So, we are the new niggers, and we need to do something about that. And it's only going to get worse for us. And I don't use it as shock. We are the new niggers. Remember that. It's all in place now. I mean, they're really dealing, and they're really taking it to our white asses. They really are. Every time I turn on TV, I see white kids that are drugged out or they emulate and they idolize these movies where college white kids, all they do is party and all they do is, you know, strive for sex. And man, they are attacking our youth on all fronts. And these Asian and Hindu kids, they don't partake in that stuff. Most of them don't. And you dumbass white kids, these fucking sand nigger, niggadoo Hindus and these chinks are going to run everything. And when they're, I mean, you already have these fucking Indians saying they're more superior to us. How dare they? We introduced them to technology. There would be no educated Indians if it wasn't for the British Empire. I don't give a damn if some guy, you know, developed some Patel fucking software or whatever for phones or computers. I don't care. Where did he learn it from? He learned it from an institution that was either founded by a white man or he learned it from another Indian who learned it from a white man. How dare they? I mean, we're not even dead off this planet yet and they're claiming our accomplishments. Wake up and realize that the white working class is the most expendable demographic group in the United Snakes of sold-out America. No doubt about it. Okay, now, if they are, you know, paving, I mean, you got to ask yourself, what are they paving the way for? And like I said, we may not move into a Mad Max thing. We may move straight into a tyranny overnight. Okay? You need to get active. What, do you want to die in your bed many years from now thinking, oh, man, you know, when I was younger, I could have done something. You know, would you be trading, like William Wallace, would you be willing to trade all that, all those days forward, for just one chance to fight against your enemies? You could be lying in a hospital bed 20, 25 years from now, knowing that your bedpan is filled with shit, wishing this Hindu nurse or this black or Asian nurse would change your freaking bedpan. She don't give a shit about your old white ass. She thinks you're a bygone relic of a bygone era. She's automatically going to assume you're a racist. Can you imagine what kind of abuse we're going to go through as senior citizens in a healthcare industry that will be completely dominated by non-whites? Yeah, I know you heard Tom Metzger say, keep your powder dry, but you know what? Come on, you need to decide for yourself. And I hope you decide that the time is now if you act, especially you brothers overseas. The closest phenomenon I can think of that parallels the ghost wolf, the lone wolf, is the serial killer. I'm not advocating the act of serial killing. I don't idolize serial killers at all because most of them target white women, and I hope they all suffer. But I got a homework assignment for you guys also. Not only are you going to watch Burn Notice on Thursday nights, 9 o'clock Central on USA, or 10 o'clock New York time, you guys are going to get on the computer and go to crimelibrary.com. And you're going to study these serial killers, and you're going to email me. And I told you before I didn't want to make contact. I'm going to change that now because I just don't have the opportunity to get to the library as much as I used to. Okay, I'm only getting to the library like once a week these days now because of certain situations. Okay, so you guys out there going to study serial killers, go to CrimeLibrary, Google them, do whatever. Go to dogpile.com, I don't care. I don't want you guys sending me sheets and sheets and pages of information about the serial killer. All I want is a quick paragraph of how they got on the police radar. Study Ted Bundy, Green River Killer, Hillside Strangler, Boston Strangler. I'm not saying we're going to emulate their acts, but how did they get on the police radar? And just send me a short paragraph of that. And I'm going to tell you right now, I may be giving out my email address here. There may be a lot of, I don't meet anybody. And if you have the ability to trace my IPO, you go right ahead. You know, if you think you want to try to ambush me, I welcome it. And that is not tough talk. I told you guys before that I am expendable. I know that my best days are behind me. So when you come to that kind of mindset, you're kind of dealing with a guy who has nothing to lose. So you're going to email me at blackhoodedsaxon@gmail.com. Black hooded, you know, like the Klan, you know, they were hoods, hooded, using a past participle, blackhoodedsaxon@gmail.com. And just give me just a couple of lines. Hey, Frank, Ted Bundy got on the police radar because he did this. Hey, Frank, the Green River Killer got on the police radar because he did this. So you guys, I need you to do that. I also need you guys to do me a favor. I'm trying to locate old guerrilla radio shows that I did. You know, when I talked, I did a number of shows out of this book called Assassins that was about the 12th century assassins in the Middle Ages. And, you know, they were just a perfect example I've ever read of guys swimming in the sea of the people. And, yeah, I know they were Arab, you know, don't close your minds, all right? We're going to start thinking outside the box. But I did a number of shows out of this book, and it was good information. I can't find them because in 2008 we didn't label our shows. So, if you guys got time, I can go to a library and listen to shows, but I can't advance the programs. I got to listen to like the 3, sometimes the 15-minute mark of the show to find out if it's one of my shows or not. So I need you guys to go into the archives of 2008 of the month of September, October, and November. Just those 3 months. Find those old shows for me and email them to me. Or you know, to find out the shows that you, to make sure that it's not a show that's already at Ghost Wolf section, go to Ghost Wolf, see if the date is there. If the date is there, then we already got it. But help me find my old shows. I did a number of shows reading out of Wasp, you know, the good stuff that I had, and I can't find them. So since I can't get to a computer anymore, I really need your guys' help with that. Okay? Just send me, you know, an email. Hey, Frank, quick, short, and simple. Hey, Frank, you know, October 27th is a show B is a Ghost Wolf radio show or a Gorilla radio show, okay? All right. You know, I want to give a shout-out to Gorilla Computer Man. I'm not computer savvy. I am a freaking caveman when it comes to technology. That's just the way I am. My gift is tactics. My gift is I can look at a geographic location and know, and I can pick the best approach to an area and from an area. You know, real quick, I share a story with you. When I was in the Army, we was in this training exercise, and we were set to be attacked by a mounted assault. And I was looking at the terrain that we occupied, and I was trying to tell my, I was only a PFC. I was trying to tell my sergeant, I said, listen, you don't want your machine gunners or your SAW light machine guns shooting, you know, across a blank field, you know, an open field. There's not going to be a dismounted infantry assault coming across the field. They're going to come across this wood, come down this wood line that parallels our position. This guy wouldn't listen to me, and he said, shut up the men like I tell you. And then he left, and I reorganized everything. I put my anti-tank weapons, my Dragon gunners, the M-47 Dragon. You remember, we're shooting the Miles equipment, multiple integrated laser engagement systems. That means when we fire a weapon that shoots a laser, and the troops or the tanks, they have these receptacles on there, and they signal whether they've been killed. If it's a vehicular kill, a light will go off. If it's a guy getting killed, they'll get a buzzing on the receiver on his vest, on his harness. So I put all my anti-tank gunners out scanning, gave them sectors of fire covering the open field, and I put all my machine gunners, my dismounted infantrymen, my guys that had the 203 grenade launchers, all in the wood line that covered this dry creek bed that led right up to our position. Sure enough, right before the mounted attack came, a bunch of dismounted infantrymen came up that dry creek bed, and we lit them up. And then after axe review, I was Mr. Snitch. I dropped big dimes on the sergeant that tried to have me set it up the other way. One thing I ran into, and I had no respect for sergeants in the Army who didn't spend their time in the infantry as a private first class, because believe me, you want a hard life, be a private and either a mechanized infantry unit or a light infantry unit or airborne infantry unit, because the privates are humping all the heaviest shit, okay? Our packs are the heaviest when it comes to, you know, being on the road or being on the march or whatever. When I say humping, I'm not talking about sex. It's this term we have for going on a long march. But Computer Gorilla Man, how can I find people? What website can I go to that's going to help me find people where I don't have to use my credit card to pay for information? I had a number of Army buddies when I was in the Army, and they had racial views, and I kept my racial views very suppressed. And I want to make contact with them. I want to see where they're at. Okay? Now, remember the book. I want to touch on it again, The Devil's Advocate. We can push things to a greater collapse or chaos factor by trying to get people that are incompetent in positions of power. You gotta bite your tongue on this, okay? All right, I came across a website yesterday. It was advertised on TV. I want you computer savvy guys to find out about it. Find out contact info. It's called charactersunite.com. And the commercial was very race mixing. It was, you know, it didn't use the word racist, but it really spoke out against racism. You know, ever since Obama got in office, we're gonna get a lot of these things. So find out about this website, charactersunite.com. It's a race-mixing website. If there's contact info or whatever, what I like to do with contact info, I got a pseudonym email address. And what I do, and I have it, it's a pseudonym character of mine. And I set the account up in a certain geographic location, and when I answer emails for that, I may do a lot of driving around for this, but so be it. It helps with my anonymity. But I check that email address only in that specific location where I initiated the account. If I'm in a library and I got like five different email accounts, one I use to, Black Hooded Saxon at Gmail that I use to connect with you guys and Tom Metzger, and one that I use to connect with family, which is a different one, one that I use to connect with social Marxists, and I pretend to be a social Marxist, and I have another one where I tend to be a woman who's trying to get on these dating websites, and I'm trying to look for black guys that are looking for white women. And what I would do, I'd try to set up an arrangement. I would say, meet me at this bar in Forest Park, Illinois. I'll be wearing a tight white skirt with red pumps and white, you know, I'll have my hair. I was married before, so I know a lot of terminology about women's clothing and stuff like that. So I pretend to be a female, and I wait up, and I shoot this email to the guy, and I have him email him back, what are you going to be wearing, so I know what to look for in the bar. I don't want to talk to a stranger. I'll tell him, and he'll tell me what he looks like. And I'll sit on the parking lot, or I'll sit across the street, and I'll wait for this guy to approach. And I won't go in the bar and meet him. I'll make him think he was stood up. And I'll wait for him to go to his car, and then I walk up to him and have a nice talk with him. You know, parking lot's dark, no one's around. I'm dressed in black, and when he looks in these devilish blue eyes, he sees the lycanthropy manifested. So anyways, every time you communicate with that pseudonym email address, what you're going to do, you will only activate that account at a certain geographic location, and you will wear nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing just in case there's surveillance cameras there. And if it's the type of library that you have to sign up for, or you have to go to the clerk and she signs you in and she takes your license information down and signs you to a computer, do not use that computer. You want a library where you can just walk right up to a computer and get right on it. Okay? Any library you go to, do you ghost wolf activity, you want to dress in nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing. Okay, I cannot tell you guys how the anonymity I feel when I'm in a city unaffiliated with me, my family, my friends. If you was to pull my phone records for the last 20 years, you would never see a phone number come from this city. I cannot tell you how intoxicating that is. I cannot find the words to describe to you how empowering it is to be in a city far from home where nobody knows my name. And you know what? When I use a rental car to get to these cities, before I turn it in, I give it a thorough cleaning. I take one of them pressurized hoses and I take it to the radiator to flush out any insects that may be indigenous to another part of the country. I take that jet spray hose, and I just wash the shit out of the tire well so there's no indigenous mud from another geographic location. Okay? Make sure you clean a rental car thoroughly. I'm looking at an atlas the other day, and you know what? I want to talk about the state of New Jersey right now real quick. Man, you fucking you ghost wolves in New Jersey, you have a fucking smorgasbord. If you live in New York, don't do nothing in New York. Do it in New Jersey. You're Newark, Union City, Jersey City, these are all mud-filled places. Patterson, New Jersey, you know? And you know what? If you live in this area, don't do nothing in that area. Drive south on 295, maybe to Camden, New Jersey. Maybe cross the toll bridge there and go right into Philadelphia. This is beautiful stuff here. I mean, holy shit, there's a Berwyn, Pennsylvania. And it's a suburb of Philadelphia. And I live in Berwyn, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. Interesting. I've never seen it on a map before. Just found it. Okay, but you guys, I mean, you know, or otherwise, you could take 78 west, due west, out of New Jersey, out of New York, and go to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. You know? Do some ghost wolf stuff there. Don't do it in if you live in Yonkers, New York, go far from home to do your thing. But if you're completely unknown by the system, if they were to come to your house and seize your hard drive and they wouldn't find a single racist website in your hard drive, that's what you want. Get used to going to another library or another computer that is not affiliated with you at all to do your ghost wolf stuff. I need to hurry up here. I don't know how much time I have left. No, and that leads me over to my next point. The minute you go ghost wolf, and you don't go ghost wolf by just saying that you go ghost wolf by something you do, when you're going through your four stages of prepping yourself mentally for your deed, you're setting a goal, you're self-talking, you're setting a goal, you're visualizing, succeeding at your goal days, weeks in advance of your mission, you're self-talking, I can do this, I will do this, I will be a member of the Swedish Aryan Partisan Army, the SAPA, or I will be a member of the Australian Aryan Partisan Army, the AAPA, you know, maybe you want to go solo, I'm the Templar of Vulcan, I serve the Roman god of fire. That's where we get our word volcano. I don't know, use whatever kind of acronym you want to sow fear, because we need to appeal to white people through our basest instincts. We cannot appeal to them rationally anymore. Those days are long gone. You're not going to win anyone over, okay? I don't even want to go into it. I'll talk blue in the face. You know, quoting books. I mean, books written by guys with PhDs and telling people to go to that book. They don't fucking check that shit out. It's too easy for them to listen to Dan Rather on TV or Mike Chump-ass Wallace. So the minute when you go ghost wolf weeks in advance, you do whatever computer gorilla man tells you to do to cleanse your hard drive of all racial stuff. You don't have any racial tattoos. You've gotten them covered over. You don't have any t-shirts or flags in your house or in your workplace. Well, someone's calling me on my cell phone. All right. You're going to do what you need to do. Okay? And you are not going to do any, you're not going to go to any racist websites from your home anymore. And you're going to find a library. You know what? I was walking around the other day and I found a hospital. I'm not going to say where this hospital is. I went in and just to ask the lady if they were hiring for any, if I can get a custodial job or something because I'm unemployed right now. And she goes, oh, yeah, go around the corner there and our computers are all set up for, job searches within the hospital. I said, okay, no problem. So I walked around the corner and I saw a room filled with computers, like 12 computers, and no one else was in there. And I sat down and I scanned the room. No surveillance. The surveillance camera to the establishment looks at the door coming in and the front desk where I was. But if I walked in that door and didn't go to the front desk and walked straight to the computer room, and I asked the lady I was leaving, I said, when I come there in the future to check on jobs, do I have to check in with you? She said, no, you can go straight to the computer. So when I walk in that building, I wear nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing, and I found out that I could click on the Xbox up in the upper right-hand corner. I don't know what you computer guys call that. It cancels out the screen. Underneath, I found all these icons, and I found Explorer, Internet Explorer, and I was able to go to resist.com. You know, I was able to check my email from there without ever... You know, I mean, it's anonymous. I mean, I cannot stress enough how you need to do everything, you know, exploiting all anonymity, okay? So, I need you guys to watch Burn Notice. I need you guys to send me short, two-sentence paragraphs just basically telling me how serial killers got on the police radar. I need you guys to check out another website, you computer savvy guys. Go to racedfund.org. RACEFUND, racedfund.org. You could type in a certain city and zip code, and I guess it gives you the addresses, phone numbers, and names and occupations of people who have voted for specific candidates. If you got a name like James Blackburn, who voted for Obama, he's an enemy of the race, and his address is on there. I'm sure they'll do something about that and get that off the air. They don't even need to worry about us because, you know, maybe we're all talking, no action, you know? It's interesting that the pariahs of our movement, of our struggle, are the guys that went down in blazes of glory, the guys that actually did things that went boom in the night, and that's a damn shame. But that's not that way with me. I've heard William Pierce say that, Alan Berg should have been left alive, you know, and stirred up more anti-Jewish sentiment. Trust me, there's enough Jews out there stirring up anti-Jew sentiment, okay? What happened to Alan Berg? You know, when I was in Austria in 1988, I took a trip to, when I was stationed in Germany, I took a trip, a weekend trip to Feldkirch, Austria. And when I checked in my hotel, when I looked out the window of my hotel, it was right at the foot of these mountains, I guess the Alps. And it was a deeply overcast day with deep gray and black defined with deep definition cloud cover. And when you look at the mountains, you didn't know where the mountains stopped and the clouds began, and when the clouds stopped and the mountains began. I was just awestruck by this. And it was, you know, a little bit of snow flurries, you know, I had that Germanic village thing going on. And I just stood there looking out this window, just blown away by the scene before me. That was beautiful. I cannot tell you how beautiful that was. Just as beautiful as that picture I've seen of Alan Berg lying dead in his driveway. You know, you can say what you want to about James Earl Ray. Oh, Martin Luther King shouldn't have been shot because he made him a martyr. So what? It was a beautiful piece of work. Okay? Our race, without using any hyperbole, is being destroyed. And they have found an ingenious way of doing it, you know, instead of machine gunning us into tank ditches or whatever, they are doing it, they actually have ourselves doing it. They have 6-year-old zombie-like kids saying, oh, no time, I've been alive, I've only had white presidents, and now we have a black president. Like it's a good thing. And all these other people talking about how, you know, how great the change is that, you know, we don't have a white president anymore. Personally, I don't care because the white presidents of the last numerous decades have sold out the white working class because we are expendable. Why are we expendable? Because we go quietly into the night and we don't do anything. We don't offer up any kind of, we don't really take outrage to the streets anymore. You know? And these CEOs and the puppets in Congress and in the Senate, they do what the corporations want them to do, and they write our laws, and they do that to further contain us, keep us mentally in a box, keep us enchained mentally, and we do nothing to break the chains, and we do nothing to break outside the box, and as a result, our race is going quietly into the night. And that's why we're the butt of all jokes now. So if you guys are listening to this show, listening to these shows, and you're a frequent visitor to resist.com, and if you want to do something about it, you know, cleanse your hard drive, get rid of all your racial shit, get racist tattoos covered up with something else, grow your hair out, but not too long where it can be pulled in a fight, change your clothing, you know, start reconning other areas of the country that you can relocate to. Another thing if you guys can do would be a big favor to me. If you guys have any Palatin Press books on how to change your identity or how to find people, Palatin Press has books called Run, Hide, and Thrive Forever about how to live life on the run. If any of you guys have any books like that, please send them to Tom Metzger. Tom Metzger will send them to me, and I will do guerrilla radio shows based on that information. We can get that information out there. You know, help us out here. Throw the guy some money. I wish I could throw the guy some money. I'm a fucking dog-faced pariah. You know, I got that name. I gave that name to myself. Pariah, kind of symbolizing my status in life. And dog-face, when I was in stationed in Germany, 3rd Infantry Division in Aschaffenburg, West Germany at the time, We had a division song that was written by some soldier in 1941 before D-Day. You know, went like this. I wouldn't give a bean to be a fancy pants Marine. I'd rather be a dog-faced soldier like I am. I wouldn't trade my old ODs for all the Navy's dungarees. I'm the walking pride of Uncle Sam. Everywhere I go, they say the Army needs men. So they're tearing me down to build me over again. I'm just a dog-faced soldier with a rifle on my shoulder. I eat raw meat for breakfast every day. So feed me ammunition, keep me in that 3rd Division. The dog-faced soldier boy's okay. That was our division song, and I was forced to sing that song marching in place before a promotion board to receive my staff sergeant rank. You know, kind of humbling, but I had to do it. You know, and that song talks about fratricide, killing our German brothers and fighting the Huns and all that other bullshit. I find absolutely no pride in that song. But I'm not a pretty guy, so therefore I am the dog-faced pariah. You know, not too flattering, but realistic. Are we going to get serious, guys? Are we going to get hot? You're going to put this stuff into action? You're going to help me find my old shows so I can put them in the Ghost Wolf section? You're going to send me some books that are good tactical significance, especially books from Paladin Press, Lumpanics, and Delta Press? You guys going to watch Burn Notice? You guys going to do some research on serial killers and how they got caught and send me just a quick message on how they got caught and how they got on the police radar? Okay? Start preparing for it now because the days of the internet are numbered. I hope people are out there are taking these Ghost Wolf radio shows and putting them on cassette. You know? I hope there's people out there translating them into other languages. You know? I claim nothing. These ideas, they're yours. I have no claim to fame. Okay? I just want my race to survive. That's it. And I hope you guys help me out here. Carpe Noctem. We must secure the existence of our people and future for white children. 14.
Well, there he goes. Guerrilla Radio Man. Off into the night. Okay, look. Now, the best thing to do, if you have any problem picking something up on the website, just communicate with merchandise@resist.com, and if you got a problem, you didn't receive a show or something like that. Well, if you're on a radio club and you don't receive a show, then directly communicate with me, and I'll send it out to you. But all the other things that may come up on the website, communicate with merchandise@resist.com. It'll cut through a lot of the red tape here. Well, the date was January 23rd today, Friday, Freya's Day, the day you get your lady and take her out to dinner, dancing, bowling, skydiving, scuba diving, mountain climbing, or whatever turns her on. Or just a weekend at the motel. This is terrible. Tommy said 14 words, 5 words. We just produced 2 more shows. I cut 2 more television shows last night. So they'll be available before too long. And so it looks like we're going to be doing at least 2 shows about every 2 weeks. And so we're going to build up the library pretty fast that way. Plus we have all the old shows. So we're running once a week on the cable system over in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then we'll gradually get these out to other cable systems. So we're off and running, boys and girls. Boy, I'll tell you, the one I did, the first show I did last night was not too bad. Second show, I got fired up. And you got to hear that second show. Now, we'll see you later. 14 and 5.
Australia calling. Australia calling. This is Radio Free Australia, broadcasting from beneath the heel of the New World Order government here in the land of Australia. This is Derek McThomas presenting the show. Hello again, Thrill Seekers. Now, regular listeners would recall that for quite some time, we here at the Bunker have been saying that Australia is in really, really deep trouble. And we kept getting emails from people saying, we were full of it, we were exaggerating the situation, we were scaremongering. Yes, these are the people who we call the ostriches, or the Cleopatras. Cleopatra, queen of denial. They just hope that by wishing the bad man will go away, all the things that bother them will just cease to exist. Yeah, these are people who stick their head in the sand right next to the ostriches, and that, Thrill Seekers, will not stop them being eaten by the lion. And it was confirmed today, in the best possible way, just how much trouble this country is in, by none other than Access Economics, the most respected economics consultancy in the country. And Access used the word buggered to describe Australia. Now, Access are a bunch of accountants, bean counters with very starched collars. It's not often that these men use such an expression in an official document. That is how badly we're travelling. Here's a report from today, the 19th of January 2009, from the Australian newspaper, which is owned by Zionist Jew Rupert Murdoch. Australia will go into recession this year with a budget that is buggered, forcing Canberra to choose between its infrastructure priorities and more populous middle-class welfare and industry bailouts. What's the bet, Thrill Seekers, that infrastructure doesn't get a look in? We're talking about a Labor government here, couldn't run a coin-operated toilet. Leading economics forecaster, Access Economics, warned in its quarterly business outlook, released today, that the nation's economic boom will unwind scarily fast, halving corporate profits, costing more than 300,000 people their jobs, and blowing out the current account deficit to more than $100 billion. Quote, batten the hatches. This is not just a recession. This is the sharpest deceleration Australia's economy has ever seen, its report says. Ever seen? This would mean it's going to be worse than 1929. Thanks to China's growth, Australia last year escaped the recession that sent our major economic trading partners such as the US and Britain into reverse. The government has consistently talked up the economy's prospects for 2009, citing Treasury forecasts of 2% growth during 2008-2009. Yesterday, Treasurer Wayne Swan acknowledged that there was no point gilding the lily in any way. The year ahead will be tough, and there's no quick fix, the Treasurer said. The Access Economics report is the latest to challenge the Treasury forecasts for the Australian economy, released in November, before the full extent of China's slowdown became apparent. In an interview with The Weekend Australian, Mr. Swan conceded neither the budget nor the economy would meet the official published forecasts. Quote, China and other emerging economies, now caught up in the crisis, are expected to slow much more sharply than previously anticipated. He said, Access Economics Director Chris Richardson said Mr. Swan would already be more updated unpublished Treasury forecasts that exposed the extent of the problems facing his budget. Quote, the government knows how ugly things are. None of it is a surprise to them, he said. Access Economics said the federal budget was buggered because of the heavy reliance on company taxes and royalties, both of which would be hit hard by the collapse in commodity prices. Quote, the glory days of big budget surpluses are over, and the feds are now staring down the barrel of deficits as far as the eye can see, the outlook stated. Their total public sector deficit, which combines federal, state and local government balances, is forecast to blow out to $10.5 billion this financial year, mostly due to Canberra's stimulus package. While Mr. Swan may be able to rein in the deficit during 2009-2010, the reprieve will be short-lived. Access Economics predicts that during the following year, commodity price falls will exact a $22.8 billion total from government finances, which are dominated by the federal budget. The national fiscal deficit would blow out to $29.4 billion during 2011-2012. Such a shortfall could cripple the government's capacity to deliver promised tax cuts, maintain programs, cushion the cost of its emissions trading scheme, well, that's a scam if ever there was one, and fund infrastructure spending plans. Access Economics warns that the government and opposition could freeze in the headlights as a result, choosing to shore up existing handouts to the middle class and to the car industry, rather than making the politically difficult decisions to cut them in favour of more worthy uses, such as building infrastructure. Yes, a few dams so we can actually have a drink and flush the toilet would be fairly useful, fellas. Mr. Swan yesterday repeated his assurance that the government and Reserve Bank would take every reasonable step to strengthen the economy and protect jobs. But he remained silent on how the government would prioritise spending in the event of a budget deficit. The pressure on Commonwealth coffers have been intensified as states and territories have trimmed their spending to accommodate lower revenues. Access Economics said the two levels of government were working at cross purposes given Canberra's efforts to pump prime the economy with multi-billion dollar spending programs. Quote, the states are failing those tests, tightening into the downturn, having spent up big during the upturn, making them part of the problem rather than part of the solution, it said. Australia's current account, which is already in deficit, was also at risk of blowing out to recorded levels, forcing a change to the dollar's historic value, the report stated. Mr. Richardson said free-falling commodity prices had stripped billions of dollars from the value of mining and farm exports, but had not dented demand for imports to the same extent. As a result, the current account deficit could top $100 billion during 2009-2010, up somewhat dramatically from the $65 billion this financial year. Yes, thrill seekers, the word is buggered. Now, here are some indications of just how buggered this country is. Here's an article from news.com.au, which is also owned by Zionist Jew Rupert Murdoch, from about a week ago, the 11th of January. The proportion of Australians who are bankrupt or insolvent has hit an all-time high, latest figures show. Data released on Friday by the Insolvency and Trustee Service Australia revealed that 6,649 new bankruptcies during the December quarter of 2008 an increase of 6.03% over the corresponding period the previous year. The number of people making debt agreements with their creditors has also jumped by 37.12% from the same time last year. According to credit agency Vendor Advantage, the number of people who declared themselves insolvent was 25% more than during 1992, when insolvency peaked during the last previous recession. Vendor Advantage uses the Insolvency and Trustee Service Australia data to compile an insolvency ratio, which measures the debt or the number of debt agreements and bankruptcies as a percentage of the total population. It reached a peak of 0.15% during 1992, but now stands at a record 0.2%. At Thrill Seekers is one third more. Quote, "It's at an all-time high and is going to get worse," Vendor Advantage Head of External Affairs, Chris Gratian, said. "We've analysed data going back to 1988, and this is the highest ratio yet. Household debt has exploded during the past 20 years, rising from about 40% of disposable income in 1990 to 156% of net income today." Quote, "Increasing debt is fine when the economy is okay, but during a downturn it can be disastrous," said AMP Capital Chief Economist Shane Oliver. "The figures are likely to get worse before they get better." Well, that's an old cliche, Shane. According to the Consumer Credit Law Centre, until about 10 years ago, most bankruptcies were business-related, but that changed during the mid-1990s. Quote, "We then saw personal debt problems overtake business debt issues," Carolyn Bond of the Consumer Action Law Centre said. "Now, most bankruptcies arise from personal debt such as mortgages, credit cards and personal loans. Although assets such as property and shares have risen in value, the economic downturn has placed extra strain on household budgets." Quote, "Our figures show around 1.3 million Australians living in households where more than 50% of income goes on paying debts," Mr. Gratian said. "For most people, that just is not sustainable." Mr. Gratian said credit laws made it too easy for people to get too deeply into debt. VEDA looked recently at 224 statements of affairs provided by the government regulator to get a picture of how people behaved when hit by financial troubles. A staggering 95% of bankrupts said they had applied for more credit after the point at which they knew they were insolvent. Quote, "People became desperate," Mr. Gradian said. "They're trying to put food on the table, so they'll often try anything." In an effort to prevent more people drowning in debt, the federal government is considering legislation that will allow potential creditors to view all the debts held by an applicant, together with relevant credit limits, and see a borrower's repayment history for the previous 24 months. Yes, thrill seekers, that's one of the death rattles in economy of this country. Here's another death rattle. This is from the business section of the Sydney Morning Herald, owned by the Zionist-controlled Fairfax organisation, dated the 15th of January, by Chris Zappon. "The economy lost 44,000 full-time jobs during December as companies reduced payrolls to brace for a coming recession. The unemployment rate increased to 4.5% from 4.4% during November as home loans, construction activity and business confidence dropped. Our full-time employment dropped by 44,000 to 7,640,200, while part-time positions soared by 42,800 to a total of 3,102,200, which brought the net loss of jobs to 1,200. Economists had expected 20,000 jobs to be shed last month, but the biggest monthly drop in full-time positions since March 2003 came as a surprise. Quote, "The massive decline in full-time employment, down nearly 44,000, is a big worry," said economist Matt Robinson of Moody's, economy.com, "even with offsetting force of part-time employment. It shows weakness in job recovery and workers having their hours cut back. It's a real shift in employees' behavior." The Australian dollar lost as much as a quarter of a US cent to 65.76 US cents after the numbers were published, but climbed back to near 66 US cents around noon. Westpac senior economist Anthony Thompson said the numbers may mask businesses holding on to employees as they entered the holidays. Quote, "Because the labour market was coming from a position of historical tightness, employers would initially be reluctant to let staff go altogether and would start by reducing the number of hours worked." Unquote. The resilience or reliance on part-time numbers was, quote, "probably retailers holding on to staff in December, given that they've ridden all the when all the fiscal handouts were given by the government. The risk is that if the impetus of spending fades quickly in the first half of 2009, then you will start to see those part-time jobs disappear as well." Yeah, thrill seekers. There's absolutely no end to this. We could go on and on and on, but it's really just more of the same. How much trouble is this economy in? Now, here's a little bit more for those of you who may be contemplating doing something like maybe buying a new car or something. That's probably not the best time to do it, thrill seekers. Here's another article from the Brisbane Times, also owned by the Zionist Control Fairfax organisation, dated the 13th of January, "Swag of Sackings on the Way." "The number of job advertisements appearing in newspapers is falling at a faster pace than during the last recession, and economists predict it is only a matter of time before companies start widespread staff cuts. Newspaper job ads fell 52% last year to an average of 10,126 a week last month, and the internet job ads fell 28% to an average of 180,535 a week, a survey by the Australian New Zealand Bank found. The precipitous fall in the number of job ads appearing in newspapers surpasses even that seen during the 1991 recession and the fall in internet job ads, which did not exist during the last recession, is the biggest since records began in 1998. ANZ's head of Australian economics, Warren Hogan, said that if history was any guide, the halving of newspaper job ads was consistent with a recession during the next 9 months. He predicted that unemployment would increase to 6% by the end of the year. Quote, "The risk to this forecast remains skewed towards a worse outcome, particularly if labour shedding or corporate failures intensify." Economists expect the official job figures, due this Thursday, will show the unemployment rate crept up again last month to about 4.5%. Yeah, well, that is exactly what happened. And yada, 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 more of the same. Yes, I wouldn't be incurring any commitments that involved any outgoing money at all. Good grief. Now, here's another story from the News Limited organisation website, news.com.au, another Murdoch publication, and this is dated the 12th of January. "The demand for new labour deteriorated to recession levels during December, with the number of job advertisements falling for an eighth straight month," a survey has found. The number of job advertisements in major metropolitan newspapers and on the internet fell by 9.7% during December to an average of 190,661 per week, according to an ANZ Bank survey. Yep, more of the same. Now, for those of you who may hear some simpleton say, "Oh, but the Chinese still need our stuff," well, let me tell you, that's not the case. The Chinese are in a world of hurt, an absolute world of hurt, and they have no way out because there is no one to buy their products. Two reasons. One, their customers in North America, Europe, and Australia have no money to buy their products. Second, more and more people are beginning to wake up and realize that Chinese manufactured items are crap. They are just inferior, shoddy rubbish of poor design made of substandard materials and put together by trained monkeys. You know, you buy a shirt and instead of being sewn together properly, it's just got little holding stitches and they fall apart the first time you wear it. It's happened to me with a couple of pairs of pants. Not that I go out of my way to buy Chinese-made clothes, it's just, since the traitors in government betrayed our country, it is well nigh impossible to buy Australian-made clothing, unless you go to a tailor. Certainly, in the ready-made in shops, I have looked, and I have looked, and I have looked, and I can't remember the last time I saw an Australian-made item of clothing, with the possible exception of socks and underpants. Now here's something from January 12 from the Australian Business with the Wall Street Journal, no less, talking about what's happening with the Chinese steel mills. Chinese steel mills are about to turn the tables on Australia by demanding a 40% price cut in the price of iron ore shipped from the Pilbara. A weekend report from the 120-year-old New York-based Minerals and Energy Service, Platts, says the steelmakers are demanding Australian iron ore producers not only swallow the price medicine, but agree that contract prices for iron ore be revised four times a year rather than once. And if they want the new regime to begin 12 days ago on January 1, rather than the normal April 1st kickoff for new contracts. The Platts report will raise fears here that Chinese steelmakers, who were held over a barrel for four consecutive years and had to accept huge price rises, are now seeing the global downturn as a means to exact payback from the miners. Yes, thrill seekers. Well, come the great and glorious new order, let me assure you that the price will be the price. If the Chinese don't like it, they can get their iron ore somewhere else, and we're not going to be particularly worried about the loss of export markets. What the faggot traitors in Parliament keep talking about now is their pathetic reason for kissing Chinese and Jap and Arab ass, because we will have recreated a manufacturing industry here in Australia and we will be consuming our own iron ore and other minerals. But this will give you a bit of an idea as to what's going on outside of Australia's borders. Here's an article from the London Telegraph from the 15th of January. Shipping rates hit zero as trade sinks. That's right, shipping rates hit zero. Freight rates for containers shipped from Asia to Europe have fallen to zero for the first time since records began, underscoring the dramatic collapse in trade since the world economy buckled in October. Quote, "They have already hit zero," said Charles Detrenick, a broker at Transport Trackers in Hong Kong. We have seen trade activity fall off a cliff. Asia, Europe is an unmitigated disaster. Shipping journal Lloyd's List said brokers in Singapore were now waiving fees for containers travelling from South China, charging only for the minimal bunker costs. Container fees from North Asia have dropped $200, taking them to less than operating cost. Industry sources said they had never seen rates fall so low. The Baltic Dry Index, which measures the freight rates for bulk commodities such as iron ore and grains, crashed several months ago and fell by 96%. The Baltic Dry Index, though a useful early warning indicator, is a highly volatile index and exaggerates apparent ups and downs in trade. However, the latest phase of the shipping crisis is different. It has spread to core trade of finished industrial goods, the lifeblood of the world economy. Trade data from Asia's export tigers has been disastrous during recent weeks, reflecting the collapse in US, British and European markets. Korea's exports fell 30% during January compared to a year earlier. Exports have slumped 42% in Taiwan and 27% in Japan, according to the most recent monthly data. Even China has now started to see an outright contraction in shipments, led by steel, electronics, and textiles. A report by ING yesterday said shipping activity in US ports had dived suddenly. Outbound traffic from Long Beach and Los Angeles, America's two top ports, has fallen by 18% year on year, a far more serious decline than anything seen in recent recessions. Quote, "There is no regular cycle slowdown, but a complete collapse in foreign demand," said Lindsay Coburn, ING's trade consultant. "Idle ships are now stretched in rows outside Singapore Harbour, creating an eerie silhouette like a vast naval fleet at anchor. Shipping experts note the number of vessels moving around seem to be unusually high in the water, which indicates small cargoes. It became difficult for shippers to obtain routine letters of credit at the height of financial crisis during the autumn, causing goods to pile up at ports even though there was a willing buyer at the other end. Analysts say this problem has been resolved, but the shipping industry has since been swamped by the global trade contraction. There are now few, if any, willing buyers at the other end." The World Bank caused shockwaves with a warning last month that global trade may decline this year for the first time since the Second World War. This appears increasingly certain with each new batch of data. Mr. de Trenck predicts Asian trade to the US will fall by 7% this year. To Europe, he estimates a drop of 9%, possibly 12%. Trade flows grow 8% in the average year. He said it was illogical for shippers to offer zero rates, but they do whatever they can to survive in a highly cyclical market. Offering slots for free is akin to an airline giving away spare seats for nothing in the hope of making something from meals and fees. Yes, thrill seekers, we here at the Bunker were telling you, it's time to plant your veggie garden. There is a big storm coming, people, and most Australians are still clueless about the magnitude of the trouble this country is in.
I live my life of ideology. I pride myself on racial loyalty. Without these things I'd have no identity. I reject multiracial obscurity. with honor and loyalty. White national socialist, proud to be a Yugoslavia. White national socialist, with honor and loyalty. I separate myself from this society. I don't need their filth or their sociology. Reject their plans of state indoctrination free. I make my claim, this is my country.
National Socialist by British artist Paul Burnley from his album The Real Public Enemy, available from NSM Records at www.nsm88records.com, the largest provider of music and literature in the world for members of the white struggle.
Exterminate! Exterminate!
Well, thrill seekers, toward the end of last week, a personality in the mainstream Jews media discovered what it was like to tell the truth about the Muslim invasion of Australia. And this person didn't even do that much. This involved a radio announcer by the name of Michael Smith, who's an afternoon host, the drive time host, on Brisbane Talkback AM radio station 4BC, and all Michael had to say was that in situations such as banks and shops where people were not allowed to wear balaclavas or motorcycle helmets, well, women, Muslim women, should not be allowed to wear the veil because it was as effective a disguise as a balaclava or motorcycle helmet and could be used by criminals to commit armed robberies and such. This, in the view of any reasonable and intelligent person, would be a fair, reasonable, and just simple common sense thing to do. Of course, our policy here at the Bunker is that all Muslims are to be rounded up and deported immediately, and that as much force as is necessary to achieve that end will be used. And you can take that the words as much force as is necessary to mean quite literally that. If we have to go through predominantly Muslim areas with flamethrowers, so be it. Well, Mr. Smith, who said nothing more than that, which anyone would consider reasonable, discovered that the multicultural thought police suddenly went into a frenzy, describing him in all manner of unkind ways as a racist. Yes, How you can be racist for wanting the law to apply evenly is a rather interesting concept, don't you think? Well, Mr. Smith is beginning to realize that Australia is not a free country. We do not have freedom of speech. We do not have freedom of political opinion, and we certainly do not have freedom of thought or political action. And if you try, first of all, the thought police will jump all over you. Second, the Muslims, those wonderful followers of the religion of peace, will murder you. Just remember, Pim Fortuyn in Holland and the Geert Wilders, I believe his name was, the documentary maker, both of whom were murdered simply for telling the truth about Islam, the religion of filth, depravity, hate, bigotry, misogyny, and everything else you can think of that is dark and evil in the hearts of mankind. Well, Michael Smith, welcome to our world. We here at the Bunker for some years now have been telling the truth about Islam, and all we have to do is read reports from the mainstream media about the antisocial and generally criminal actions of Muslims in Australia. The pack rapes, the riots, the multitude of other crimes and antisocial acts. And for this, for merely reporting what appears in the mainstream media, and making a few comments on it, of course, on a pretty much weekly basis, we here, Reset the Bunker, receive all manner of threats from the followers of the religion of peace. We here have lost track of the number of times we've been told we're going to be killed in the name of Allah, that our women are going to be raped in the name of Allah. Yes, fine religion of peace is Islam. We here at the Bunker can't really think of anything more depraved, more un-Australian, and more in need of being pushed out of this country at the point of a bayonet than the filth of Islam. Well, here's a report from the Zionist-controlled Fairfax and Brisbane Times on the 17th of January. Michael Smith's awakening proceeds apace. Here's the story. A Brisbane radio announcer who suggested that the hijab be removed in banks and shops has received death threats. welcome to our world, Michael. 4BC announcer Michael Smith on Wednesday said wearing a face covering, such as some Muslim women do, posed a security risk because it made identification difficult in the event of a crime. Why not just say that armed robbers can wear them as a disguise? Good grief, say what you mean, man. Wearing a face veil in certain places, such as shopping centres, was also offensive and scared little children, he said. In a recorded thread on the station website, a caller said, "Your head is on a plate." Then expletive delete beeps, yes. "You're going to be dead soon," expletive beeped, "racist bitch." Station General Manager David McDonald said most of the calls seemed to emanate from Sydney, surprise, surprise, and he said Smith's original comments had been taken out of context. Quote, "This has really been blown out of proportion," Mr. McDonald said. He said there was never any racism in this at all. There was nothing about religion. It was purely about security and safety issues. Mr. McDonald said Mr. Smith's call was only to show the face, not remove the headwear. Quote, "A lot of criminals have used this sort of disguise themselves," unquote. Mr. Smith, a former Victorian policeman, was aware of the trauma that robberies caused, Mr. McDonald said. Complaints to both official channels and those phoned into the radio station were based on media interpretations of Mr. Smith's comments rather than the comments themselves, the general manager said. Quote, "This is extremely disappointing that it's been hijacked for other purposes," he said. Mr. McDonald said upset staff had been counselled, don't you love that cow, oh God, and security stepped up. On the station's website, Mr. Smith defended his comments, quote, "It seems this country's media finds it difficult to talk sensibly about certain topics," he said. Well, that would be anything to do with racial differences and Islam. "I've been branded a racist in writing by a major national television network, which should have known better. How could anyone say that my comments were racist?" Queensland Police acknowledged that a complaint had been made by the radio station and said it was under investigation. Well, Michael, what you're about to discover, in addition to what you've already discovered, is that you are absolutely outside of any protection by the police. You see, anyone who in any way critical questions or might cause a problem to the multiculturalist agenda to flood Australia with all manner of subhuman filth and rape and pillage and take over our country, anyone who mentions that and does anything at all to slow that down can be threatened, murdered, bashed, anything can happen to them, and the police will do nothing because they have been ordered to do nothing. We here at the bunker speak from personal experience. One of the staff at the bunker here was the subject of a conspiracy by a member of Fight Dem Back and another person or persons, and this member of Fight Dem Back, the Marxist race-mixing organization in Sydney, attempted to procure another person to commit murder. Evidence was obtained. Screen captures are still on file of this attempt to incite murder, and the federal police were informed. A formal complaint was made, and the last time we here at the bunker looked, attempting to incite murder was indeed a serious criminal offence in federal law because it involved an electronic medium. The federal police refused to investigate, and there have been a string of other serious criminal offences committed against white patriots involved in the struggle, and not one of them, not one of those complaints to state or federal police has been investigated by the police, because we patriots, we Australians who care enough to want our children to have a future, we are outside the law. And by the ruling of the Zionists to control our society from behind the curtain, we must be killed by their sock puppets. And the Zog troopers, that's what we call the police, will do absolutely nothing about it. Michael Smith, we here at the bunker anticipate that you will lose your job in the not-too-distant future, and it will happen like this. The Executive Council of Australian Jewry, if it has not already, and we think it would have already, will be in touch with the Fairfax organisation, with which it has considerable links, and they will simply be told to get rid of Michael Smith. Fairfax will not resist, because if it does, all the Jewish advertisers will simply refuse to place their business with Fairfax radio stations and publications. This commercial blackmail will get to the managers, who are basically cowards and without moral principle, who will then sack Michael Smith to avoid losing this Jewish business. That, thrill seekers, is the way it works. It's happened to me, it's happened to many others, and it's going to happen to Michael Smith. Michael, if you're listening to this, send us an email. We look forward to hearing from you. Now here's another member of the Religion of Peace showing his true colours, showing that you can take the sad nigger out of the desert, but not the desert out of the sand, nigger. Here's a report from the Daily Telegraph, owned by Zionist Jew Rupert Murdoch, from today, the 19th of January. It's a new Lebanese Muslim actor. You know, one of these discovered ethnic stars who played a member of a criminal gang in a movie about the fairly horrendous and phenomenally large Lebanese Muslim gang problem in Australia, and guess what? In real life, this dirty camel-nosed Leb turns out to be a nasty little thug in reality. Back to the story. A leading actor in a movie depicting violent Lebanese gangs set for release in cinemas next month has been arrested and jailed in real life. Ali Haidar, 19, is languishing in a cell at Silverwater on a serious assault charge, but the makers of The Combination are hoping to have him out for the film's premiere next month. The film is tipped to perform well at the box office, with the 200 people who have watched private screenings reacting well. It captures sickening but realistic violence between warring gangs and is being promoted as a chance to come and see the real Australia. In one chilling scene, Haidar's character, Zeus, who uses drugs and guns, is involved in bashings and a gunpoint hold-up, is there any other kind, of a convenience store and is warned that he could go to jail. Quote, "That doesn't scare me, bros," Zeus says in the film. The film's star, George Basher, that's a good name for a Leb, and director David Field, have seen Haidar, who was arrested in the inner city several weeks ago and charged with assault occasioning bodily harm. Quote, "He is shattered. He cannot believe he's in there," Mr. Basher said. "I think he's got potential. His presence on screen was unbelievable. He's really hurt. It's the first time I've seen him really upset." Ah, poor little Leb's had an appointment with reality. Poor little boy discovered that he indeed was not above the law, and he can't go around bashing people with impunity. Oh, that would be a revelation for some of these Lebanese gangsters. Quote, "Oh, Haidar's image, including his mohawk haircut and earrings, is being used to promote the film, but according to Mr. Field, the teenager, whose character was so different to the prospect, indifferent to the prospect of time behind bars, is terrified of jail in real life." Yes, we've seen Arabs do that before. Quote, "He's not feeling that way about jail. I'm really sad about Ali. He was fantastic to work with. He was on time, completely respectful of everyone. He never came loaded up," whatever the hell that means, said Mr. Field, who was in the movie Chopper. "We'd love to get him out and have him at the opening. It is a strange thing when the whole life in imitating art thing happens." End of quote. It is the second time life has imitated art, with the stabbing murder of Mohammed Omar, 24, last month, at Homebush at a Lebanese club, where a scene from the movie was shot. Mr. Basher, who also wrote the screenplay, said it reflected his life growing up in southwest Sydney. Quote, "A lot of kids do wrong things. They make the wrong choices. The movie shows what happens if you do handle a gun," he said. Well, the wrong choices. The initial wrong choice was letting this subhuman camel-nosed filth into the country. Because these are dirty sand niggers who are absolutely incompatible with a civilized society. Come the great and glorious new order, they will all be rounded up and deported.
My eyes have seen the glory of the trampling at the zoo. We've washed ourselves in niggers' blood and all the mongrels too. We're taking down the Zog machine, Jew by Jew by Jew. The white man marches on.
Departing from the normal criminal problems involving Muslims in our society, let's go back to that other criminal problem we had before the Muslims and the niggers from Africa were imported. Yes, I'm talking about our very own homegrown niggers, the Australian Aborigine. This article appeared on the Daily Telegraph website, yes, owned by Zionist Jew Rupert Murdoch, on the 15th of January. A woman and three men who bashed, robbed, and then delivered a final indignity by stripping the shirt off their female victim were parasites, police said. The 37-year-old woman had simply looked at the gang of thugs on a bus at Ferntree, south of Sydney, at 4:30 p.m. Tuesday afternoon because they were being noisy and obnoxious. Well, that's normal for Abbas. In a group, they responded by pulling the woman by the hair out of the bus door, and two of the men punched and kicked her to the ground before the female thug moved in. The female offender ripped off the victim's top, leaving her topless, then ran off, Chief Inspector Ken McDonald said, quote, "It is probably one of the lowest acts you could do to a female as a female. It just shows you the caliber of those animals that do unfortunately prey on people that are vulnerable on their own." The attack happened on the Princess Highway, and police are hoping more witnesses will come forward to help police track the thugs down. They stole the woman's handbag, purse, hat and shoes, pretty thorough, before they fled in the direction of a caravan park. Well, I think you know where to look, fellas. Police said the woman played a key role in the attack and was the first to launch a tirade of abuse at the victim as she tried to take shelter near the driver, who obviously did nothing. Detectives were following several leads yesterday and were confident of making arrests in the case. The woman was described as being of Aboriginal appearance, about 20 years old, and was wearing jeans and a black singlet. The first man was of Aboriginal appearance, about 40 years old. The second man was of European appearance, with strawberry blonde hair, a rat's tail, and aged about 20. He, thrill seekers, would be what's known as a gin jockey. Another man of Aboriginal appearance, about 20 years old, with short dark hair and wearing a red cap and t-shirt, was also wanted over the attack. Well, there we have, no doubt, a bus full of people, and we here at the bunker would really like to know why the other passengers on the bus, the other white Australian passengers, sat there like frightened, cowardly sheep and did nothing as these savages bashed this white woman senseless on the footpath. We would say because they have been mentally conditioned to be cowardly and stupid. This, thrill seekers, is another excellent argument in favour of every white person out there who actually wants to survive in the wonderful new Australia that has been inflicted upon us from above. If you want to survive, you need to become proficient in some form of martial art. And don't be afraid to use it in self-defense. Because if you don't, thrill seekers, you are going to die. It is really that simple.
I know what you're thinking, Bunk. You're thinking, did he fire six shots or only five? Now, to tell you the truth, I forgot myself in all this excitement. But Me and Mrs. A 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and we'll blow your head clean off. You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
That brings to an end the 19th of January 2009 edition of Australia Calling. And remember, thrill seekers, tomorrow will belong to those who are bold and brave enough and who have foresight enough to seize it.
The sun on the meadow is summer reborn. The stag in the forest runs free. But gather together to greet the sun, tomorrow belongs to me. The branch of the linden is leafy and green. The Rhine gives its gout to the sea. But somewhere a glory of it unseen tomorrow belongs to me. The babe in his cradle is closing his eyes. The blossom embraces the bee. But soon says I,
Fatherland, shower the sun, your shield.